All right, so tonight we're continuing with this exploration of why is mindfulness. So mindfulness as a word is something that's really seeped into our culture, into our daily lives. It's easy to hear that word and just in a casual way, be mindful of this, mindfulness, all those kind of words slip in really easily to our culture. And it's nice because it really is an accurate word for the most part, paying attention to what's here and what's now. Now, when we put the word why is in front of it, that points us toward the deeper meanings of this word, the deeper potential of how this process of paying attention actually is meant from the time of the Buddha, and especially when we take it in context of the Four Noble Truths. And so I want to explore that first foundation of the four foundations of mindfulness. This is the fundamental sutta around mindfulness, the establishments of mindfulness. Now, this sutta starts off with saying this is the direct approach. This is the direct way to open and realize nibbana, realization, enlightenment, the third noble truth. All right. So the Buddha is putting it right out there that this is the most direct way that I've found to really see this for yourself, to realize this for yourself. So you see, this ties back into the Four Noble Truths. This really sums up that third noble truth of Nibbana and the path of that. Of course, wise mindfulness activates all the other path factors. It helps us be more aware of our actions, of our speech, of our livelihood. It helps us be aware of our effort. And at the last talk of this month, I'll kind of go back around that framework. But I wanted to focus really on this first foundation and how it really ties into this sense of liberation. Now, one way to frame this liberation is seeing through this illusion of self, this illusion of a separate, isolated self as ongoing and continuous, right? So this is a critical way or a fundamental way that the Buddha defined this third noble truth, right? So what does this have to do with being mindful? How does this relate? So Satipatthana Sutta, all the way through it, but especially that first one, I like to look at it as this process of deconstructing our identification with the sense of self. To actually see how we take the body as me, as mine, as my sensations, my experiences, that's where I reside. That's who and what I am. So the Buddha, in a very systematic way, kind of says, look a little bit more closely at that assumption. How true is it when you really look closely and carefully at it? And also start to look at the ways that the self manifests in terms of behaviors. So the self is really more active because we just kind of, if this doesn't make any sense to you, just kind of take this makes sense, I think, hopefully. That you feel more yourself, you feel more intact when you're upset, when you're angry, when you're triggered. Because you really, I'm having this emotion, I'm really upset about something. Versus if you're just kind of relaxed and you're just looking at nature, there's no demands on you, there's really nothing to do in that moment, your sense of self is a little quieter, it's a little softer. You're kind of enjoying the stillness. Perhaps that's what draws you to meditation, is that touching into that quality of stillness. Now, one of the actions that the sense of self does is it controls, it figures out, it plans, it judges, it compares. All right. And in mindfulness, have you ever heard a teacher tell you to make sure you compare how your mindfulness is doing? You know, judge that breath as good or bad. You know, that's not what we say. We say just allow the breath, allow the body sensations, allow this emotion to be just how it is. Be able to witness it, to notice it, to be aware of it. Okay, it's calling us into that capacity of mindfulness. The sense of self becomes less active, less engaged when that's happening. We're allowing the moment to be just how it is. So that's how the Buddha starts off this sutta, is to go sit quietly, someplace that's supportive and secluded, and start to pay attention to the breath. Notice how the breath is flowing, right? And it doesn't matter. He explicitly says, notice if the breath is long. Notice if it's short. He doesn't say, and one is better than another one. He He says, just be aware of it. He actually uses this really beautiful analogy. If you are a potter and on a pottering wheel and you're turning a bowl, how you would be really aware of where your hands were, how you can't like be spaced out, otherwise the pottery would be destroyed. So you're present, you're noticing when your hands are coming close, when they're going further away. Just like the breath in and out. Starting to notice, is it a whole body experience? Noticing the subtlety of it. Right? So the more we go into the physical and felt sense of this, of the breath, the sense of self becomes a little quieter. And it also ties us very much into the present moment. It's another thing the sense of self does, is it creates a past and a future. Right? Right now, where is your past? Other than in your memory, other than in your ideas. Where's your future? You know, assuming you can't time travel, right? You're just simply projecting how the future you will be. Has anyone figured out how to do that really accurately? How are you going to wake up in the morning? Happy, sad, tired, rested? Each day is new, you know, but yet the sense of self is trying to manage this basic insecurity of impermanence. That things are always changing. So the sense of self is trying to find some way to have some sense of solidity around it. And yet that way, the strategy embedded is the causes of our suffering. And that's what the Buddha realized. If we can see through that in a deep way, in a profound way, there's a level of freedom that starts to rise outside of those conditions, outside of those situations. Right? So the Buddha starts off by trying to guide us into this non-involvement with what we're seeing, to allow it to be just how it is. There's plenty of time to be involved, to make choices, to plan. But from a moment-to-moment perspective, from mindfulness, we're just seeing the moment just how it is. Right? So this is already starting to quiet the sense of self. But then the Buddha goes even further. He says, okay, where do you take that sense of self as being you? Where is that identified? And in a little bit, we'll do a dyad kind of experiential exercise to point that out, to point out where we take the sense of self and where actually is the sense of self. So if that's a thing that's interesting, stick around a little bit. So he goes through these, he was really a skilled teacher in terms of bringing forth analogies and metaphors and saying, okay, this is, look at the thing from this way. This is a complex, kind of hard to see thing, but look at it in this way. One of the examples he used was like a bag of beans. You know, that we take the beans and there's all these different elements in them. And that's how like the different parts of our body is. That we take that as being what we are, but if you look closely, we say, okay, there's all these different aspects. There's my liver, there's my stomach, there's my gallbladder. And yet those in itself are just organs, are just things that are there. And we put them together and identify it as being I and me and mine. And it's like a little bit opposite of the, and hopefully I'm using this right, gestalt, when we, the sum of the parts we make into a whole becomes bigger than all the parts. It's almost like we're taking those apart to see, okay, I'm identified with this part and that part. So in this way, we start to, again, loosen more and more that sense of self. The Buddha goes into another way of doing it and looking at, he kind of throws out these different ways of looking. And as I read this one sutta, it's like he keeps turning up the volume, making the lesson a little bit more and more clear. So next one, he looks at the sense of elements of the body, right? So elements is not what we think of so much in this modern Western society, but this is a, you know, often an older way of looking at the body, and some traditions still look at that this way, that there's the heat element or the fire element, there's the water element, there's the air element, and the earth element. Some of you done meditations that focus on that out of this sutta. Notice the part of the body that is solid, that is grounded, that is heavy. Right, so you can feel kind of the bone element. That's the earth element. Notice the part that is warm, or the fire element. Notice the quality of heat. Noticing the quality of air, of openness, of space, and the sense of fluidity of the water element. So each of these elements, it's harder to identify as that is me. I'm my earth element. I'm the fire element. we start to kind of separate out all of these changing sensations and experience and see that it's not really who I am. I can't really lay claim to that aspect. Right? And so this is starting to loosen that sense of self. Again, not from an idea or a concept, but look for yourself. You think you're so solid? Actually question that. Actually look more carefully. And then the final aspect is the graveyard contemplations, right? So when the Buddha says, okay, part of this sense of me is that it's everlasting, that sense of me is going to ever continue on. And there's also the fear when the body does age and we do face our death, what happens after that. And what the Buddha was trying to do is kind of break through that identification with the body, that this is who and what I am. And when that body ends and dies, then that means I die too. But actually start to see, you know, that the sense of self is outside of that quality of body. So in this time in Asia, in India, you could actually go very easily and watch a body decaying. Right? It sounds really strange this day and age, but you can duplicate that by seeing a roadkill, for example, to see how does that body decay over time. And that's what the Buddha had monks and nuns do, to look at the cemeteries and see how the body was decaying over the first few days and the first weeks and months. And each time reflect that this too is me. I'm not outside of that. My body is of this nature. Until finally the bones are scattered and even turned to dust. Right? So that sense of identification, this is me and this is mine, falls away. Now this is an interesting piece in how it collides with some of our cultural dysfunction. Because one way we could, I think Ajahn Chah described Westerners as being basically too much in their heads. They were thinking too much. I think he had some analogy, as I see my parents who've been working diligently in the library. It's like you have this big library in your head of all these concepts and ideas, and you got to clear that so you can actually see reality how it was. If Ajahn Chah, the Thai forest meditation master, would have people just go out and sit in the woods, to let the woods start to teach you, to let things start to quiet down. So there's kind of a collision that happens when we look at the body from this perspective of deconstruction, because for most of us, we need to first become more embodied to actually learn to inhabit our bodies, to actually learn to be right here, right now. Right? So that doesn't change any of this. It's just how we identify as that's me and that's mine. Does that make sense? It's really that sense of embodiment. And that's one thing in our practice that sometimes might be lacking. That we don't do a lot of embodied things in this practice. We sit there and we just, you know, we're meditating, which can be very embodied, but we don't test our bodies, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. What I mean by that is if you've ever done any kind of movement art or kind of, maybe it's a martial art or maybe it's dance or some kind of athleticism, you learn that you have to really be embodied for that to work. And you get feedback when you're not embodied. How many times have you done a yoga balancing pose and your mind drifts and you fall on your butt? Or you lose your balance at least. You have to be there right then and there. So this is not discounting the journey of embodiment or really being connected to your body. It's just about this identification. You start to see that the sense of consciousness is more than you are. This came up last week also around the difference between mindfulness and investigation. Because a lot of these later practices, when you're actually looking at the body and starting to see it as the parts instead of the whole, you're starting to see the decaying of the body, is bringing much more of that quality of investigation or contemplation, where you're actually seeing and directing your attention. And mindfulness, we usually teach it to simply meet the breath just how it is, the body just how it is, and not necessarily think about it, not to use your wise comprehension to think about it. And partly I think that is because we're so well developed in our thinking processes. It's so easy for us to slip into that. We need to rebalance the body, the moment-by-moment experience. And yet the contemplation is really helpful. The way I think of it is, This isn't a breath meditation. You know, it's mindfulness practice. And whatever you can plop lots of things in the middle of that mindfulness. I can choose to focus on my breath, on the sensations of my body. I can choose to focus on sound or sight. I can also choose to focus on something like a cognitive or mental component, a pattern of maybe feeling ashamed or embarrassed. You know, when you feel that arise, you can turn that to be the center of your mindfulness. That becomes the mindfulness object, right? And that really unhooks the key to us being able to integrate our practice in our daily lives. Because it's hard to just say, okay, this busy meeting, this crisis, this everyone stop for a second. I want to just meditate for about 20 minutes. Then I'll get back to you. You know, you don't see that happening in the ER very much or in a high-stakes situation. But yet, how do we still practice? How do we still engage in our practice? And often this contemplation element, we can bring purchase to. We can kind of running that in the background a little bit. Okay, where's my heart in this moment? Where is there stillness in this moment? You know, where is that sense of me in this moment? And so it's this background thing that starts to direct your attention in the midst of life. And I think that's just as much a part of mindfulness practice and wise mindfulness as our breath. We just, you know, trying to see the bigger shape of it. So next time you hear the word be mindful of your speech or be mindful of this action in the daily language, realize that that's pointing to a much deeper element. This is kind of reclaiming the depth and the wisdom of this beautiful practice of the Dharma. All right, so let's just sit quietly for a couple moments and then we'll have a chance for some announcements. Thank you for your attention. And so the rest of the evening, we'll have little announcements here. We'll take a break. We'll come back, do a dyad exercise, which again is a very powerful way to kind of meditate out loud, to have someone helping and supporting you to look more clearly. And it's, we don't really focus on this question of, is the self really real? Is the self really solid? So it's a fun one, I think. So Adam has a few announcements, and I think Carla also will jump in. All right, so final reminder is Donna. So Donna is how we support their organization, how we continue to survive and thrive, and also for teacher Donna. So there's ways to do that online and then also back at the table. All right, we'll come back in 5 minutes, so at 9:15. Okay, welcome back. Make your way back to your seats. How many people have done a dyad before? How many people don't know what I'm talking about? Okay, mostly a lot of new people. Okay, so a dyad is two people. So basically what you do is you sit across from another person, and sometimes, and when I first started doing them, there's a little bit of a social anxiety about, okay, what's that going to be like? But really you can close your eyes. It's not really a social interaction. It's much more of a sense of if someone's guiding you into being more and more holding a question to the foreground. So there's going to be two questions. The way it's going to work is 5 minute spots. So person A will talk, second person B will be asking the question, and then we'll flip-flop and then do another set of questions. The questions are designed for us to see something experiential in this moment. So it's not so much a question of what do I think about it or my intellectual, you know, understanding, but more how is that question showing up right here, right now? So you can almost think of it each time, it's a fresh time. You hear the question, you just let it drop, and you see what arises is in response to that, what arises spontaneously. So it's not like, you know, I'm going to show how smart I am or, you know, try to, you know, do something like that, but it's much more, and it could be almost like you just even hear the silence. You just see the silence. And so you might say the same thing over and over again. But each time you look, the idea is you look more closely, look more fully. So let it take you in a deep place, right? So the question, the first question is going to be, how is the body you? How is the body you? Okay, so you decide when you get into your group, your two people, one person will ask that question. You'll choose who's going to do that. They ask that question, where or how is the body you? Okay, and you hear that question if you're the responder, and you just see where it takes you, and then you respond some way. The body is me because, well, it's I washed it today, or I had this experience, or I tell it what to do and it does it, you know. And you just answer, and the person hears it and then speaks again, asks the question. So the question is just asked again and again and again, right? It's not in a rapid fire where they give a little bit of space. You're not dialoguing or drifting off that. You're just asking the question, see what arises. So where is the body? How is the body you? How is the body you? Right? And then do 5 minutes, I'll ring the bell, you switch roles. And then after 5 minutes, I'll ring the bell again and give you the second question. And then we'll revert back. Okay, does that make sense? All right. So those in the room, go and find partners. And those online, if you don't want to participate, it probably easier if you just jumped out and then came back in 20 minutes. So it's easier for us to arrange it. And then otherwise, Bob, let's have you open up the groups and we'll get started. Okay, coming back into silence. Okay, now switching roles. How is the body you? How is the body you? So just asking the question again and again, another person responds. All right, so just coming into silence for a couple more moments. All right, so now we're going to switch roles, going back to the original questioner and responder. And this time the question is, where is the sense of self located in the body? Where is the sense of self located in the body? Taking your time with this, it's subtle. And there's a request, the acoustics in this room are, they're very good. So try to talk a little quieter too, so we can have kind of that subtlety of it. Where's the sense of self located in the body? Okay, so 5 minutes, first partner. Letting the bell bring us to silence. Pausing for a moment. And then one more round here. So the person who was just asking the question now is responding and vice versa. Where is the sense of self located in the body? Right here, right now. You don't have to add that part, but where is the sense of self right now in the body? All right, go ahead. All right, so we have a space now for any questions. So if you're here in the room, you can raise your physical hand and we can bring the mic around. Do you want someone to run it for you, Ryan? You're okay? All right. And then let me just see if everyone's back online before you start. It looks like everyone's back. Okay, now everyone's back. So those online, you can raise your virtual hand and I'll call on you. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Something that came up when we were doing the exercise was how our experience is localized to this form. Mm. And like Justin was saying, he can't experience anything outside of this room. You know, he can't experience something without his body being there. Mm. So like the body's always there when you're experiencing something. And everything is being experienced through this body. Like I can feel this when I touch my knee, but I can't feel if somebody else touches their knee, for example. Mm. So that's what came up. So it'd be interesting to talk about that.
Yeah. So that sense of where the body, the sense of the physical location really defines that point of experience, right? And it's also, you're talking, you didn't say this explicitly, but it's kind of built into it, is that, and that's where the physical body's experience is. Because we can be thinking about, you know, Hawaii or someplace completely different and not really in the room, but there's a disconnection that happens. So like for us to be really connected to what's here, that's what our body has to be experiencing. Yeah, beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, Leslie over here. Thank you, Ryan.
Well, I didn't have nearly as wonderful an experience as that. and I kept feeling like, first of all, it felt like a trick question. And second of all, it felt like I was making up answers when I couldn't find it. You know, I was like, oh, it's in my head. Is it? Oh, it's in, you know.
For the second question?
Well, yeah, and also for the first, you know. I just sort of, and I don't know how much of it is this, you know, mental knowledge that there really isn't a self, rather than my actual experience of that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I just couldn't get out of my head, I guess.
And the trick question part, tell me about that.
I didn't know the answer. I mean, I wanted to find the answer. I wanted, you know, it's like you're supposed to know the answer to this question because that's why people ask questions, you know, that sort of thing was going on. Like, I can't find it. And I don't know how much of that is really my experience. I can trust perhaps that part of it is, but there's this other part of me that's like, you're just making that up because you know that's what you're supposed to say. Hmm. So...
yeah, that all makes sense. And, you know, it was the second question was a trick question, that if we really look, where's that sense of self located? Is it located like I can locate this cup? Can I actually vector and touch it on all sides? You know, is there a specific part of my body that sense of self is located? There might be emotions, there might be energy, there might be all those qualities that, okay, that feels like me. But if I really look to that sense of self, where's that thing that which is perceiving, that thing that is that I say is me? If we really look, yeah, it's you can't really find it because it is amorphous. It's one of those things that it's not really amorphous. It's just something that's not. It's an illusion, basically, that we're taking as being true. And it is tricky when you know. I've had that experience too. It's like, okay, I know it's not supposed to be here, so I'm not supposed to find it, but that's, you know, so I'm going to say no, you know, but what am I supposed to say? You know, and, you know, maybe this wasn't the best format or situation for this question, but you can have a sense of, sometimes when you're really quiet and you can just ask yourself, where is that sense of me? What is that sense of me? And if you're really still with that question, you don't let the mind come in and offer an answer, and you actually try to see it experientially. Another way is to say, okay, I'm witnessing this breath. Okay, how do I know that I'm witnessing it? Well, there's something that's aware of that witness. Okay. But then what's aware of that? And you keep stepping back and back and back and back. And each time you get a little bit more quiet, a little bit more subtle. But it's a little bit like those two mirrors looking at each other. It just goes on into infinity. But But at some point, it gets so quiet, you realize that, okay, there's always a little bit of that separation, a little bit of that distance which is there. And yet, there's this potential for that to fall away. Right? And that takes us to a whole different paradigm. There's a big difference between the sense of self feeling really thin and feeling very quiet, and the sense of self literally falling away, that perspective is just not there. It's something to be curious about. Yeah, to what is that? What is that? Where is that? Thank you, Leslie. I think you're not alone in that experience, that honest sharing of that. Claire, will you go ahead? Claire from Fairfax.
Yeah. Hi. The first question, what was the first question?
The first question was something like, How is the body me? How is the body me? How is the body you?
Yeah. So with that question, I just, it was really intense experience. What I came to was that it's what other people, It's what symbolizes me to other people.
Yes.
It's what other people can hug and know.
That's right.
And then it just felt like, well, it's like my car. I get into my body. It's my vehicle.
Yeah.
But I just like, just thinking about it more and more, I just got more and more unattached to my body. Like my body, it's been with me through all this stuff, but I don't know. And then the next one, like where is it located? Then it just became pretty emotional. It felt like it was located in my heart, and that, you know, it just felt like so many feelings, just love and tears.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, that sounds like a...
Did I get it right?
I mean, I think that was the right experience for you. Yeah, that was the right thing to experience for, you know, for you at this time. And, you know, that first one, it's like the body, part of what I was hoping for is kind of what you experience, is that the body, you know, it's often what I identify with, the parts I'm ashamed of, the parts I like, the way people relate to my body. But also inherent in that is that this body is always changing, right? It's not, our bodies aren't like always the perfect youthful image. They change. They get older. They lose capacity. And the more we're attached and identify with a bad body, then there's that suffering that arises around it. Uh-huh. And the second question about where is the sense of self located? You know, it often, when I ask that question, I often do get that it's more of this energetic or this emotional quality, you know, that, okay, I feel, you know, there's this tightness here, and maybe that's where that's coming from. But yet it's kind of like a, it's kind of more of a localized sense of self that's there. And you probably saw that emotions were pretty, you know, were fluid. They're also changing and moving around. So part of it is showing that sense, even the sense of self from the emotional perspective is very much, it's much more fluid. Much more open. So we're trying to give an experiential sense of that.
Thank you.
And I just also want to apologize to those online. A few of you were found by yourself, and then you were with two people, then you were three people, and then by yourself, because I think I was trying to help Bob, and Bob was doing his job, and I was probably making things a little worse. So I apologize for that. But I think hopefully at the end, everyone got to where they needed to be. All right. So Kim, go ahead.
When I was thinking about that second question, where's the sense of self in your body? One of the things that came to mind was that when I'm not feeling grounded, then that sense of self is actually not like in my body. It's like outside, and there's judgment happening, and there's like some voice that's kind of saying that this isn't right, or that you're not doing that correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't, you know, so that was a good, like, I guess I can feel the when it's not in in my body, and then it was, maybe that was, it was a little easier than when I am feeling grounded, that sense of self just is kind of more like a heart thing or a feeling thing, like more of a connection, more of a, there's a, seems like things are feeling, I don't know, I can't think of the word, but it's easier to think of when it's not feeling like that sense of self is not in the body.
Yeah, sense of self, it seems like it's more tangible out. When you're kind of out of the body into a thought or yeah.
Yeah, that's more obvious. Like, oh, yes. Yeah. And then that sense of self, like, oh, if things are symbiotic, things are feeling it connected, then it's harder maybe to feel that sense of self.
Yes. Yeah. And another way you could say it is a sense of self is more soft, more fluid, less defined. Well, it gets more solid when we're kind of more in that judgment or that opinion.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. Understanding. Nope.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you, Kim. Okay. All right. Let's go with Gwendolyn, and then we'll go back in the room here. Go ahead, Gwendolyn.
Greetings. Apologies for the terrible lighting. I was really drawn to how is this body you? And I am a biologist, and I immediately think of the, I guess, paradox of self and no self, very much like mycelia, mushrooms, that underground is one organism, it is one being. But each fruiting body that we see above the surface, we think of as an individual mushroom. Mm-hmm. And so it's thinking of how all of those individual mushrooms have completely different experiences and yet are all the same connection. Mm-hmm. And just really, I don't know. I the whole exercise I really enjoyed, and I found it very grounding and very clarifying. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, that sense of that interconnection we see in mushrooms or in those kind of arenas, you know, that quality of one organism. Yet it seems it presents as separate ones. It's like as Dharma practitioners, we start to say, okay, if what is that in us? You know, what is that truth in us? What is that which unites us with other beings, with other things? And that's going to this. It's hard to put into words because it's outside of words, but it's pointing toward this. Sometimes you can experience it as this quality of stillness, of quiet, of depth, of emptiness. But yet, it's not like a void. It's just like this interconnection that. I mean, it's just this experience of looking out and seeing that there's really nothing different between you and that other person or that tree or that mushroom. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. All right, let's see if there's anyone else, and then we'll come back to Anastasia. Anyone else in the room? Yes, go ahead, Noah.
I thought it was cool when I was just talking with my partner, sort of watching her go from, oh, for the second question, that is, oh, well, the self is in the head, and then kind of slowly kind of layer after layer go through like, oh, actually, there's like just these kind of different experiences, these different states of being, these different feelings that create these moments where the sense of self is definitely not just exclusively in the head.
Yeah.
And then we kind of both realize that, oh, this makes up the full space that the self exists in. And I thought that was cool. And it kind of reminded me of, I guess we kind of both discussed, there's sort of this like inherent, you know, when we come, well, like I felt, when we come into this space, there's this feeling of like, oh, you know, the like way of thinking that like this is, we are in the head, you know, it's very like Western, and that has not served me well. So I feel ashamed of feeling that way. And yeah, there was just this sort of like feeling of, oh, thinking that the self is in the head is shameful. And I thought that was probably something that a lot of people shared and was also just a very interesting point. So I wanted to communicate that to the room.
Thank you, Noah. Yeah, that sense of self, that shame is just, and it's also just another sense of self that's kind of having a judgment about the sense of self. So it kind of gets really tangly there. And just a general reminder too, it's, in terms of confidentiality, it's probably best just to share from what your own experience is versus someone else's, because, you know, let them have, if they choose to share it, you know, let them do it at their own time. All right, Anastasia, go ahead.
Hello, Tim. I have a question. So when we were practicing with the how are you, your body, I'm generally like very much in my head sort of person. So I was having sort of like a distance from your body sort of moment existing. Mm-hmm. So not very embodied. But when I was practicing throughout the week, the homework that you gave, I noticed that like if I was in conversations with people, especially afterwards, I felt like very embodied and had a very strong sense of self. Mm-hmm. So my question is like, it just seems like both the level of embodiedness and the selfiness like shifts a lot depending on the situation and conditions.
Yes.
So like, is there one thing to practice during certain times and something else to practice depending on like where you are landing with that?
Yes. I mean, the general rule of thumb is find some, whatever practice works in the moment is good, is good enough. So you might find over time, and there's so many different variations of how we're wired, how we're conditioned. So I can't just say, here's a roadmap. You know, I could maybe, if I talk to you directly, we could kind of figure out, okay, here's these areas. But basically the rule of thumb is if it helps me be present, connected, alive, then that's a good practice. And sometimes it's really keeping a little bit of that awareness in the body, like we talked about in the homework. Sometimes it's more looking at the very nature of this, what I'm believing in, and seeing through that as just a relative truth. So there's, and it does change a lot. You know, there's, it kind of, the ratio might change tremendously. If I'm talking to someone, if I'm really in a listening mode, I might have most of my awareness in the body, and I'm receiving what's being said and feeling how the body is affected by it. Maybe if I have to speak about something that's more abstract, then that part, quality awareness might get a lot smaller because I'm having to like think about this concept and articulate it. But yet I can still keep a little bit into the body. Does that kind of follow, answer your question or
a little bit. I guess I was just thinking about how you talked about how in our culture we can often not be embodied. And so it's just like, if I don't feel very embodied, it almost feels like it's easier to skip to the non-self part. So I guess I was just like wondering, do you have to go through the embodied part and then sort of like looking for the self of sense of self if you're having like a disconnect from the body moment?
Yes. Yeah, because there, it's weird. I know we're running late, so if you have to leave, go ahead. But just to, I think it's a good important point is that there's a way that when we open to the sense of self, there's a way that we disassociate from what we normally take as being the self. Okay, but that's a different disassociation. It's kind of like a one of discernment and seeing through. And yet, even in that sense of disassociating, this is not me, this is not who I am, yet there's still a very deep availability to what the body's experiencing. there's still a very deep, you know, you're feeling the breath, you're feeling the body. Disassociation that comes from trauma, for example, or from overwhelming situations, or from just not learning how to be in the body, there's not that connection to the body, right? So it's like we are still very connected to the body, and yet we also realize that's not really where my essence lies. So basically, yeah, if you're kind of skipping over that and you're not connected to the body, it probably needs more time being embodied, especially if you tend to be more of a head kind of person. Yeah, spend some time with the body.
That helps. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So thank you all. And next week, I forget who's coming. Is it someone good's going to be here? I promise. All right. Have a good, lovely evening. I'll be here the last week. And also the last week is the social time beforehand. So if you want to bring some food, chat, connect, it's a lovely time. Goodbye. Thank you for joining us. Have a good evening. Bye.